and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear once again. I am Mopton, joined by, he's the chief defender of the faith and the king of the casters. He is Mr. Brett Podcast. Brett, do you enjoy talking to talented people?
I do, oddly enough. It's a thing, and we're pretty good at it sometimes. But the truth is that we have a super talented singer, guitarist. She is from Emily Davis and the Murder Police, which is an interesting name by itself. But we have Emily Davis. Emily, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Well, we're happy to have you on the show.
Absolute pleasure.
Happy to talk about the new album, Never a Moment Alone.
Yes, sir.
And that's due June 24th, is it?
It's June 25th, yeah.
25th, okay.
Out everywhere on June 25th. We're very much looking forward to letting people hear it, and we're very grateful for the opportunity to talk about it with you guys today.
Well, great. Well, let's do that then. Let's talk about how it came about and and all things Never a Moment Alone.
Cool. So,
just start.
We're more conversational than questions.
Well, this is our second album, made possible by the very generous number of people who supported us on Kickstarter. I believe we had about 140 people who contributed, amounting $13,000 last winter. And so we spent the better part of this beginning year recording the album and getting everything situated to promote it. And now we're finally releasing it. I would say that it's a very alternative leaning 90s alt inspired, but there's also punk rock elements and folk rock elements. And so it's kind of a hybrid of those three genres. It's always very difficult when people ask you how to define your own sound. I think unless you have very clear cut influences, of which I think we all have many. So I try to distill it to those three. And I think that kind of summarizes it.
Well, who are the members of Emily Davis and the Murder Police? Obviously, there's yourself.
Right.
And who else is in the group? What do they bring as players and as people to the band?
Okay, well, our bassist, his name is Jose Macias. If you see him, it might seem a little interesting because he looks very much like a metalhead, because mm-hmm. he is one. Although we do not play metal music, but I mean, there's a certain technicality that comes with enjoying metal. And he's been in metal bands. And so I think he brings that technicality to his bass playing. But he loves an array of music, including the music that I've written. He's been following and supporting me long before we were in a band together, in the local music scene. And so, there's a certain technicality and I guess aggression that he brings to our music that I think works really well. Our guitarist, his name is George Torres. And George is kind of in the same position as Jose in that he's been involved in the local music scene for a very long time in a number of bands. Not a metalhead, but he does like punk rock just like me. And so I think that's a commonality we share, is that we enjoy that vein of music. And I think it surfaces in our artwork. I would say that George is very much inspired by Albert Hammond from The Strokes. I think he's very much inspired by David Gibney. Not David Gibney, oh my God. Oh my God, what's his name? David Gibney. That's a totally wrong name. Oh my gosh, help me, the guitarist from from Pink Floyd.
Oh, David Gilmour. Sorry.
David Gilmour.
It's been a day. There's the David Gibney I know, and that's definitely not him. David Gilmour. Oh, gosh. So he's inspired by David Gilmour.
Makes you feel any better. I'm inspired by David Gibney.
We all are.
Yeah.
Very inspirational guy. our drummer, Tomas, is also a big Strokes fan. He comes from an indie rock background. And so while we're a heavier band, we're not super heavy, but I think this is probably one of the more heavy things he's ever done. I think it's really helped him grow as a drummer. But he's just, I think one of his drumming influences would be Mick Fleetwood, which I love Fleetwood Mac. We all do. We're all big Fleetwood Mac fans. And I think there might be an influence in our sound that comes from them that I think Tom really just appreciates knowing how to service a song and doing what's needed to be done in a creative way. And so I guess hopefully that summarizes all three of them in ways that when they hear this, they're like, okay, I approve.
Now, that's all right. Now we politely got them out of the way. Let's talk about you.
Okay.
And your background.
Sure.
So you started singing and playing guitar when?
Oh, man. I feel like I've always sung. I was actually talking with my guitarist about this the other day, and that it's I never decided one day that I'm going to sing. I come from somewhat of a musical background. My dad was when he was a child, he was in a touring choir. He toured the world a couple times, actually, in a choir, the Tucson, Arizona Boys Choir. And so always staying around the house when I was a kid, always was very good at it. Sometimes I wonder if it's like a biological thing where you can kind of just inherit that capacity. I don't know. But around the time I started high school, I knew that I'd always enjoyed writing songs, singing songs, but I didn't have a musical way of doing it instrument-wise. I tried piano and I hated it. I'd gotten pretty decent at drums, but I didn't want to be Genesis. So not that there's anything wrong with that. I wanted to play it. I think the idea of playing guitar sounded a little more appealing to me, just because also I've always liked rock music. And so I started playing guitar at 14, writing songs pretty much as soon as I could come up with chord progressions. And so been doing it ever since. 17 years later.
Yeah. That's right. And you've got your own solo stuff, but now with the Murder Police. And so, you know, mm-hmm. you've progressed a little bit and evolved in that time. Would you say that it is an evolution, or would you say that there would be a point where you would go back to the solo work?
I think there's a massive progression, I will say that. And if you listen to my solo albums, I think there's always going to be a progression in sound when you're given the ability to collaborate with people. You can get very much stuck in your own ways, and sometimes that's not a bad thing. But I think for me, I'm always looking to grow and evolve, and so being able to do that through the help of other people has been massive for me. And so I would say there's an evolution in sound. I'm not opposed, you know, if I end up years down the road writing songs that they just aren't into. I mean, and I still love them. Obviously, that's something to consider, but I think every album that have ever had any involvement in, be it solo or with the Murder Police, there's been improvement in sound. I think they've gotten more eclectic, more dynamic, certainly louder. So I'm very blessed and fortunate to be in a band with them.
So then what prompted you to choose to work with them, and how did you kind of get all together as the Murder Police?
That was an evolution too. I released my third album, The Worst Kind of Curse, in 2015. I was advised, maybe you should try putting a band together. I'd been in bands before. It never really panned out. Experiences weren't always very good. So I was like very hesitant to do it, but I also knew that I was getting kind of stale, and I wanted to be able to experiment with sounds and things. And so I posted on Facebook saying, hey, does anyone want to be a band? If you want to, I'm very self-deprecating, so I hate to say audition, but that's essentially what it was. So I held an audition and people came. The first iteration of our band didn't have a name, but the only person that still remains from that iteration was George, our guitarist. And then Jose, I knew him through George several months later. George started off on bass. Our original guitarist had some kids, had to focus on that. And so we brought Jose on bass a few months after George joined. Had a different drummer that eventually we had to part with, and found Tom. I've known Tom since high school, George knew him through other mutual contacts in the music scene. And at the end of 2017, after pestering him for the better part of a year, he decided he would record an album with us and join our band. So we've been Emily Davis and the Murder Police as of this iteration for about 3.5 years.
So one of the things I'm interested in, when you do like an audition, what's it like? Like what, when you get people in, like, how, yeah. Like, what kind of people do you get in, and do you have a feeling, like, right away, like, oh, I wish you hadn't shown up, because you're just not going to fit, or is there, like, you know?
I mean, that does happen, and you feel bad, because you know that this person earmarked a portion of their day, drove, brought all their equipment, set it up, maybe, ideally, learned the song. Sometimes they don't, and it's like, why are you here? And then just to see it in real time and be like, oh, no, I'm going to have to, like, tell this person, no, thank you. How awkward that is. And there were people there where that was applicable. And there were people like George who, the minute he started playing, and I could just tell by his vibe, for lack of a better word, he just seemed like a good fit. And you could kind of tell that was the case with him. I think the same thing with Jose. Jose ended up going on a tour with me and George and another friend of ours at the end of 2015. And just cutting up and acting stupid and having a good time. You know, I think half the battle is being able to enjoy the people you're in a band with. I can't imagine being in a band of people I didn't like. That would be horrible. These are quite literally my best friends. They're my family at this point. And so that's such an important and integral factor. And so to be able to see that they're very capable on their instruments, but there also is a good rapport between us. It's pretty easy to identify that there will be a good rapport and that they are talented. And if one of those elements is lacking, it's just not going to work out.
So yeah, it's unlike Pink Floyd in that regard, at least. You know?
Yeah.
I think the problem is that you sit there and you say, no, thank you. If you just told them to F off,
yeah,
say, yeah, that would be much easier, wouldn't it?
Oh, man, I would worry about what kind of reputation that would give me, but it would be easier.
It would be easier.
How do you mince words and say, please F off?
Please F off. As long as you put please before anything.
Yeah.
That's good.
We've had to do that, like, with people who've come on board to try and play drums for us before we got Tom or anything, where it was just like, you are not going to work. And how do we go about disseminating that information to you without, I think it's just going to be awkward no matter what. I think that's unavoidable. And I guess that's what you sign up for when you go and audition for somebody, under the understanding that there's a good chance you might get accepted, but there's just as good of a chance that you might not. And so, you know.
You know, I've been trying to figure out a nice way to tell Brett that he's not needed for years.
Yeah.
So I understand.
So I'm just good at being a hanger-on, but but so that, have you actually done many of the auditions yourself?
As far as carrying them out?
Or no, I guess as far as going.
For somebody else.
Yeah.
No, not really. I was I've only been in a couple bands. It's weird. It's so funny. Everybody I know that's active in a local music scene of any capacity, they've been in 1,800 bands. And I spent so many years just playing by myself that I never really had that experience. I formed a band in like 2012. We were around for a little bit. We were playing my originals. Didn't really work out. I was in a band for about a year called Cigarettes After Sex. But I was friends with those guys. And so they kind of approached me saying, Do you want to jam with us? So that wasn't really an audition. I think that I had made myself known enough in the local music scene that they were able to identify, okay, this person plays rhythm guitar. They'd be a valuable person to invest time in. So I've never really auditioned for a band, no. And I think I would be really nervous to do so. So I'm just grateful that I'm a songwriter and that I don't have to like find a band to join. I get to like form them.
That's better. Yeah. You're the one in control then, you know, they're coming to you. You still like can be nervous, but
yeah.
Different
reasons.
What about your songwriting then? What kind of you know, how does it start? Do you obviously you started on the guitar then? Do you start with you know, a chorus or a title or words, or do you start with the music? How does it kind of develop for you?
I really struggle sometimes it varies for sure. I can say that. Normally I'll start with like maybe a little riff on guitar, but I will say that it's very, very difficult for me to get anything off the ground if I don't know what I'm singing or what I'm singing about. And so for me, lyrics are a big part of my songwriting process.
Mm-hmm.
I always marvel at people who can just kind of throw a song together and mumble their way through it and then refine the lyrics later on. I have a hard time doing that just because I'm so particular about them that it's nice to have, I kind of have a repository of lyrics or lyrical ideas or things that I can draw from whenever I start to kind of get that itch of, oh, I'm playing a riff, oh, it's coming together, it's evolving into something. And then I could just kind of go into that repository and find a topic or a verse that I've written out that might fit the mood of the music that's coming together. And it's kind of, it's a Frankenstein process, I guess.
Well, it's pretty obvious that, you know, just listening to your albums, how personal the songs are to you. And that comes across in the lyrics.
Thank you. Yeah, they are. They're an extension of, you know, my lived experience. So I have a hard time not writing about personal stuff as like an outside observer.
And I have to say that you have one of my all time favorite song titles in God Hates Flags.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah. Thank you. I wish I could credit myself. I think George came up with that. I think we were driving somewhere and I was kind of zoning out. And then all the guys started like Beavis and Butthead laughing. And I'm like, what? And they were Beavis and Butt laughing about the idea of a song called God Hates Flags. And so I kind of went, oh, maybe that'll be something I write at a later point, and I did. So it's nice having bandmates who can come up with some stuff that so you don't have to come up with everything. Like they'll throw a song title out or a line or something.
You know, you're on tour with three guys. I can't imagine that that's fun. It's good they're going to do something.
It gets smelly really quick.
I bet.
Smells and snores.
Yeah. You get used to it, I guess.
Yeah.
So sure. Then when you bring them into the process, like, do you just kind of bring them the song with your, you know, like the demo version, and then they kind of add their twist to it?
I think we've kind of started sussing out a formula. It's hard to say, but I know that George is probably the first person I approach with songs because he helps me really like come up with, if I'm stuck on something, like, do I want this progression? What's the note I want here? Should I maybe, we have a song called Same Old World off our first album, Same Old World, and he kind of helped me figure out a way of organizing the chorus so that it was different a couple times. And it made the song tenfold better. So I like coming to him first so we can make sure because we're responsible really for the musicality of the song. And so we come together and make sure. Sometimes it's fine as is. Sometimes he comes in and, you know, we powwow over it. And then we'll eventually introduce it to Tom and Jose. And, obviously, any input or ideas they have are very valuable. We have a song called Eternal Babylon on this upcoming album, and it goes from like sounding like one song to sounding like a completely different song, and that was completely Tom's idea. So when we brought it to Tom, it was just the beginning sounded like the end as far as how it didn't sound like two songs put together. And Tom had this idea of transitioning into a completely different sound and playing this kind of Tom heavy rhythm. And so I really liked, at first I was like, I don't know about that. That's changing it a lot. And as we played it over and over again, I realized just how much it worked and how cool it was. And so sometimes you have cases like that where, you know, in the fourth quarter, when we bring the song and everyone's working on it, there might be a different twist or turn that's contributed by someone else. So it's interesting to see how they evolve for sure.
Eternal Babylon is actually my favorite song under the album too.
Really?
Yes. Good. Because I love the fact that it does. I think it encompasses a lot of your music, like, and a lot of kind of a good description of your style.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, again, the reason why that song is I love that song too, and I think I liked it before, and I think the reason I love it now is because of Tom's contribution to it. I think it just made it super cool. So you could thank him for that.
You'll have to do that for me, but
okay, I will.
So then, you know, how much of songwriting and making music is happy accidents?
I mean, I wish I could say that more of it was, because I feel like it would happen more often. But I think a lot of it is. I think a lot of happy accidents happen in the studio for sure. I think a lot of songwriting is just, you know, you have to make the time for it and be willing to work on it. Sometimes a song will just kind of come to you. I wish that happened more often, but I think more often than not, you have to be dedicated to doing it, setting a time aside, like, okay, my goal for this week is to write a song or two or something. I'm admittedly not great at that. It's something that's on my short list of areas to improve, but every now and then it's really nice and magical when something gets in your head and you're just able to like evolve it to the point where you suddenly have a chorus and you have a melody, and then you can go and it comes out of you within 10, 15 minutes. I love when that happens. I wish that was the case all the time, but it's not. So
there's 14 songs on the first album and a similar amount. I can't remember exactly how many on this one.
12.
They both have 12. Yeah.
So both have,
yeah.
12.
Oh, 12. Oh, did they? Okay. So how many more songs did you write for the album that you didn't record?
We recorded everything I wrote.
Oh, okay.
And I know that sounds like unusual, because you hear a lot of bands that are like, we wrote 25 songs and picked 15 or whatever. But I think that's because there's songwriters out there that maybe they're able to produce more stuff at a quicker speed. But for me, I'm not going to show them, I'm not even going to bring a song to the band that I'm kind of undecided on. I have to love the song and figure out the song for the most part by myself before I even introduce it to them. And luckily, I've never really introduced a song to them where they were like, Nah, we're good. We don't want that most of the time. either they'll keep that to themselves, or they won't. Or that, I mean, every song we've ever recorded and we put out there, they were okay putting out. I'm biased. I love all of them. But yeah, I mean, if that happens at some point when I present a song and someone like is against it enough that we don't do it, that's, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But I will say that I'm not someone that just, okay, I'm going to go through and write 20 songs and we're going to pick the 10 best. I only really put in front of people, including my bandmates, something that I'm really behind and believe in. So yeah, I had written 12 songs and we recorded 12 songs. So.
Do you find that a nerve-wracking experience to bring the songs to them, or is it at this point, yeah, is it still this?
Yeah, oh no, it is. I mean, songwriters are, I think, like, I don't want to generalize for everybody, but from my experience and from some of the limited experience I have with other songwriters, we are very sensitive about our songs and what we present in front of people, especially if there's going to be other people collaborating on them. And it's something, you know, like any other area in life, it's something that you need to maybe not be so sensitive about or be understanding about or whatever. Not everyone's going to like everything you do ever, you know, in any capacity. But yeah, I think there's a great sensitivity that songwriters have when, especially with their bandmates, you know, if some dude in Idaho doesn't like my song, sorry, there's probably some other dude in Idaho that might like it. So it'll even out. But if one of my bandmates doesn't like my song, it sucks if you want them to. So.
Yeah, it's like, come with a new idea. Come on now.
Yeah.
So, tell me then about the studio experience, especially in this case. Like, is there a part where you go in, you start working, and then do you feel like you get behind at all? Or do you kind of, like, know enough to stay on track and be able to hit the marks that you need to?
I think the longer you engage in recording albums, maybe the better of an idea you have with regard to how much time you need and how to pace yourself. With Same Old World, we didn't book enough days. We thought we had, like, I guess there was maybe not a great mutual understanding, because I think we went into the studio and the guys who were helping us with the album figured we'd spend the last 2 or 3 days in the studio mixing the album together. And I don't think we didn't realize that that was a thing. I think we just thought we're going to go into the studio for 2 weeks, record everything, and then they'll mix it and get it back to us. And so when we were kind of nearing the end of the time that we were in the studio, they were like, hey, you're running out of days here. And we're like, what? We still have a couple. And they're like, no, those days are reserved for mixing and mastering. And we're like, oh, crap. So I think we, you know, I had never recorded with a band. I'd always recorded my albums. I mean, I had recorded with a hired band, but I'd never recorded with my band, you know. So it's a learning experience for sure. I think over time we realized this is what's feasible. But you also have to be prepared. You can't just go into a studio going, oh, I think the song might be ready. We'll see. Maybe we'll change it or whatever. It's like, no, you have to, that song has to be ready to record. Your parts have to be written. They have to be fully sussed out. Otherwise, you're going to spend time and money that you don't get back. And we're not at a level, or we don't have the luxury where we can just go into the studio and write. The writing has to take place. We'd love to get to that point, because there's so many bands out there that they'll just go to a studio and they'll write an album at the studio and then record it. And that'd be cool, but we just don't have that availability. So it is definitely possible to get behind. But I think as we continue to record albums, we're getting better and better at keeping on top of that, for sure.
You just need to build your own home studio, obviously. I mean,
yeah, for sure. That'd be amazing.
I think it's so interesting because, I mean, nowadays with the technology that we have, I mean, there's a lot of people that can record even under their cell phones and still make a viable album. Like, you know, have you ever considered those kind of things? Do you just prefer the being in the studio, the being together part?
I mean, I do what I know I'm capable of doing at home, so, or what I can get away with, really. I have a YouTube channel, and so if I'm going to record a cover for my YouTube channel, I can do that at home by myself. It won't be, like, amazing studio quality, but it'll be decent enough that people can hear it and enjoy it, and it doesn't sound, like, horrible. But to the body of knowledge that is required – to record a band, to mic the band up for recording, to make sure all the lines and channels and tones and things are correct when they go into the recording software, the mastery of that recording software, mixing the album, mastering the album, all of those elements, operating all this machinery that you would need to have in the first place, which is a massive monetary investment. I don't see us being able to record an album at home now, and I don't know when we would be able to do that without investing a lot of time into learning software, into getting machinery that we just don't have. So I'm not opposed to it, but definitely having people who are far more knowledgeable in those areas assist us is greatly needed at this point in our creative trajectory. So
how about music videos? Do you enjoy that experience, or does you know, doing your videos on your YouTube channel, does that help, you know, make you feel more comfortable in front of the camera when it's time to shoot a music video?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I've been shooting myself on camera for YouTube for 10, 11, 12 years now. I don't know how many. So I think that does definitely enable you to feel more comfortable. Also, it's nice to remember that while people will watch it, there's nobody in front of you watching you when you film it. You know, there's one dude with a camera, maybe, but there's nobody there. You're performing to a camera. You're not performing to people. Ultimately, you are, but you're not. And so I think that helps me calm my nerves. If I was in front of like 200 people pretending to lip sync, that would make me feel pretty awkward and nervous. But I'm not. I'm in front of one dude and a camera. So it's easier. So
then with those, like, and I watched some of your covers on there, how long do you spend doing the covers, like, and how do you choose which covers you want to do?
Well, I have to like the song. I have people who ask me all the time, will you play this, will you play that? And if I don't know the song and I don't already love the song or believe in the song or whatever, or I don't think I could do a convincing job of the song, I'm not going to do it. So obviously that's a big component. But as far as the amount of time it takes to get from point A to point B, learning the song, recording the song, doing a little bit of mixing of the song, filming and editing that from start to finish, if I already have the song learned, it might take a couple hours, but it's not a huge investment, no. And choosing the songs, again, you know, if people make suggestions, people suggested, my most recent cover was by Offspring and I did All I Want. And that's a song that been suggested to me over the years a number of times. And I do love that song. And I did feel that I could do a convincing cover of it. So that made it easy to choose. So
what are your top five all-time favorite punk bands? And then I'll tell you if you got the right ones.
Oh, man. So it's funny. I think people who know me know that Bad Religion is definitely a massive influence of mine. They are my number one band, period. I love them. So if I could say Bad Religion five times, I would. I do love NoFX a lot. I love Against Me a lot. Who else? I really like the Dwarves. They're pretty cool. I like Propagandhi. They're pretty cool. It's kind of like Bad Religion, NoFX, Against Me, Other.
And then everybody else. Yeah.
The right answer is always the Ramones, and then you go on.
Okay.
Just for the future, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll put them under NoFX.
All right. That sounds good.
But yeah, it's interesting because a lot of the punk bands that you mentioned are more of the like later genre as opposed to the very early punk roots. Do you go back to the early punk roots? I mean, yeah, Bad Religion, still not exactly in the...
Well, they started in 1980, so...
Yeah, I guess.
They
yeah,
celebrated okay. 40 years last year. But they didn't get super popular, arguably, until late 80s, early 90s, so I can see why you would see that as maybe... as opposed to the Ramones, who were in the late 70s when they were
doing
stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think it's interesting. I guess it's just the way you kind of time out your punk eras, but...
Brad, she's much younger than you. Haven't you figured that out yet?
No, that's true.
That's what's
true.
Going on there.
Well, I mean, I think though that, you know, 90s skate punk I was a kid in the 90s, and I wasn't really into punk rock until I was in high school, which was in the early 2000s. But 90s skate punk definitely influenced, I think, a lot of people in my age range, at least. Or at least they influenced bands that people in my age group ended up liking. And then they could trace those roots back to 90s skate punk. So I don't dislike bands that are the earliest punk bands. I think the Adolescents are pretty cool. I think that's an example of one that's fairly early on, but it's funny. It's always hard to say, you know, that I love punk rock, even though I do. But I just, my love of punk rock is mostly encapsulated by my love of Bad Religion. So I feel bad saying that I love punk rock sometimes, because I love Bad Religion really is the truth, and I like a number of other punk bands.
So, no, and of course, totally fair. Now, you went out on tour with Bad Religion as well. Like, what? How cool was that then?
I was every day you just wake up and you laugh, because there's no way this is happening. Like, there's just no way this is happening. Every day that's how I felt. You know, every time we'd get to a venue and I'd see the stage and I'd see their curtain, the stage curtain with their band name behind it, and I'd see them on stage sound checking, or every time we walked on stage when we were about to start playing, or every morning I woke up, it was just like, this is not happening. And I still, whenever anybody asks me and I have to recall it, it still feels like this little bubble in my life that, did it happen? Are you sure that happened? So I mean, that's what it was like, I guess. It was cool. Sure.
So then what kind of things did you learn from even just being out with Bad Religion?
Oh, man. The differences between playing, you know, even like local venues that are respected, you know, which we've done a number of times, in front of large audiences, which I've done a number of times. The difference between doing that and the absolute beast that is... like going on a tour with a headliner that is, you know, loved and respected by millions of people, just to see the behind the scenes, all the working parts that go into bringing a live show, you know, from the light guy to the sound guy. It's funny that the lighting guy, his name is David Gibney. That's why earlier when I said David Gilmore, and I said David Gibney instead. There's some context, but I mean, all the working parts that go together to coalesce to make a live show on that level, that was a learning experience in a number of ways. I feel like I could write a college essay on just how much you saw that you were like, wow, you just, you know, you as an audience member, when you go and you see, I don't know, when you go and see Bad Religion or any other band that is a big band that's, you know, selling at a big venue at your respective town, you know, it's a big sight to behold, but you're really only seeing the tip of the iceberg, you know. And when you actually go on tour with them and you go behind the stage, the behind the scenes and see everything, that's when you see the underside of the iceberg. And it's just like, wow, there's so much going on, you know, from the guy selling merch and setting that up to just everything, you know. It was wild. It's overwhelming.
So were you ever concerned about their fans and how they would react to your music?
Oh. So concerned, because we don't play punk rock.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and there are people in the punk rock community who are very open-minded, understanding, receptive, and thank God for those people. But there are also people in the punk community where if this is my definition of punk, and if you don't fit this definition that I have of punk rock, I'm going to be loud about it and make you feel bad. And so that was definitely a fear of ours, you know, going on tour with such a legendary band. Who's played loud, aggressive punk rock music, and we play loud music and it's aggressive, but I don't know if you would, we have a song or two that might tread on punk, but we're not a punk rock band. And so I was just, you know, I also have this bad habit of having every worst case scenario in my head going on all at once. And so my nightmare was we'd go on stage and we'd start playing one of our songs and people would be like, boo, what is this? But that was never, ever the case. It was amazing. Every single show, we had such good feedback from everybody. I say that without hoping that I come across like arrogant, but we didn't have any experience where someone in the audience came up and they were like, why are you here? Every single time we played, people were very, very receptive, and people would come up to us at our merch booth or at any point in the evening and just be like, we're so glad you played. Who are you? We want to know more. And so that was a very rewarding experience to have.
I'm used to having people say, "Why are you here?" to me, so don't worry.
Yeah, you just
all the time.
You get used to it after a little while, but
yeah, exactly. Do you have any rituals before you go on stage that you have to I don't know, to calm the nerves or to just, you know, a routine or anything?
That's a good question. I do like having a moment or two by myself. Oh, that's funny. Never a moment alone. I like to have a moment alone. I like to be able to just kind of collect myself, and I'm not really much of a meditator because there's a lot going on up here, but being able to just have a moment to like dialogue with myself about what I'm going to do and, you know, feel confident in myself and remember, I don't know. I think it's just, it's important to have those moments. There's a lot going on around you. And so even, you know, playing for Bad Religion or playing at Moe's Barbecue or whatever, like, it's nice to have a moment to yourself where you can just kind of like reflect inside and, you know, remind yourself why you're doing it and get your headspace in order. So,
you know, I mean, we've talked to people that are, you know, been in the business for 30, 40 years and sold millions of albums, and they tell us they still get nervous, you know, to go on stage. It never really goes away until you get that first song out there.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I completely agree with that.
So then,
so it's nice to do that.
When you're writing a song, especially, like, do you go through and as you're performing it, do you think, like, oh, I really want to play this live?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, there's a number of songs on our album that were, I think it's going to be a lot of fun, especially given our fan base. I mean, loud, rowdy songs that we write, I think people really gravitate towards those. And so we have a song called Don't Make a Promise that we're releasing on June 11th before the album comes out on the 25th. And
my favorite song in the album.
Really?
Just so you know. Yes.
Okay.
You
know. Well, that one is probably the closest thing that we get to punk, I think, on the album. And I can imagine just having a lot of fun with that song live. And so I'm looking forward to playing that one. We released a song called Why Weren't They Stunned on the 14th of May. There's a lot of fun elements to that song. So I can imagine just like really enjoying playing that live also. I think those are definitely two songs that'll translate well.
Do you ever like kind of workshop a new song in a live venue beforehand?
I mean, with this album, no.
No, obviously. Yeah, it makes sense.
For sure, with Same Old World, I mean, when we had that option, we played those songs a number of times locally and on the road, actually, before the album came out. And so, yes, I would say that under normal circumstances, that would be the case where we're able to, I don't know about workshop, but here's a new song. We're going to play it for you and engage people's reaction to it. Sure. I mean, we were able to do that with most every song that's on Same Old World before it came out. And so I think that helped us to determine whether or not they were album worthy. And I think they were. So
there wasn't a moment in that case where you did a new song and it didn't get the reaction that you were hoping for?
You know, when I was a solo artist, sure, that was definitely the case a number of times. But I think as a band, I think that's changed because the guys are very, I feel like as the front person, I've allowed a lot of, I think this is apparent to them and I think they would attest to this. I've made it very open. Like this isn't, I'm doing everything and then your guys just are here as backing me. Even though my name's in that band title, like it's always been fair game. If somebody wants to write a song and bring it to band practice, I would love that. You know, if anybody has a burning desire when it comes to the songs we're working on, like that instance I gave of Tom earlier with Eternal Babylon, I've always been very open to, receptive of, and encouraging of that. And so I think the TLDR, the workshopping live and it going poorly doesn't happen because we do all of that at band practice before the song even gets performed. When I was a solo artist, you know, I would write a song that earlier the day and be like, I have a show tonight. I'm going to play this tonight. And sometimes it worked out. And sometimes, you know, I'd leave the stage going, well, I'm throwing that one away. That was done. So.
Again, more of the trials and tribulations of being in the music industry.
Sure, definitely.
So what then is the hardest thing about being a musician for you?
I put a lot of pressure on myself. I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily, because it makes you productive, it makes you driven, but I put an inordinate amount of pressure on myself, I think, to do so many different things with regard to managing the music, making the music. I've been stressing out in the last couple of days about I need to write new songs because we're about to have an album out, but the album's not even out yet. But I've been stressing about that. Like, what comes next? I'm always stressed about what comes next. And it's a good thing, and it's also a very stressful thing. So I don't know if that's a good answer. I think there's a number of things that are hard about music. I think, an overwhelming desire to succeed, whatever success means, however you define it, but it becoming like a very big part of your motivational force. Rather, it's easy to get lost in that, to lose your love of just doing it for the sake of it's the thing that's kept you alive. It's the thing that gives you purpose. It's your higher power. Going from that to like, I have to succeed and do the thing right. And, I think losing track of what's important can also be a big negative. And I'm trying to work on it. I'm just trying to be grateful for what I have. So.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that impresses me about you is that you are, present on social media and YouTube, and you're using kind of the modern ways to grow your fan base. And it's a work in progress. I mean, it's one of those things that doing it this way takes the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think you really connect with the people, have a stronger connection with them when you do it the way you're doing it.
I hope so. I think that's something that I've heard from people that I've grown as friends over the years, through art and music and things. I think there's a mutual investment. And I think that needs to be the case if you want to do anything well.
Yeah, I think, when it comes to music, I mean, there's so many elements to it. So then how much of the business do you take care of yourself?
I do all of it.
Well.
Yeah. I do everything. I do it all. So I look forward to the day where maybe I don't, but for now I do literally everything.
So you sit there and you study all the analytics on Spotify all these different things.
And see, that's what when I talk about getting lost and stuff, like I just, at some point your brain just wants to shut down. I have paid attention to that before, and ultimately those are important things, and that's why Spotify provides them to you, but just the sheer amount of how many numbers are involved in everything. And if you don't satisfy the algorithm gods to this extent, you get banished to algorithm hell. Getting lost in that is very easy. And so I try to do the bare minimum to keep afloat on those areas, but also like protecting my brain and my creative integrity and things like that. Like at some point you have to like find balance in those areas. And so my hope is to grow to a place that someday I can pay somebody a very big amount of money to do that for me, so I never have to do it again.
Brett will do it for you for free.
Right, oh, sure. Sure. It'll be great.
You can run all our Facebook ads, 'cause I'm done with that too.
Facebook. Oh, I know.
Oh.
I wish I was more on it, but I'm not. I just can't do it.
That's something that I've had to, familiarize myself with recently also, is because before I would just be like, boost this post, I don't care. And then you don't see the kind of traction you want on it, or you're wondering why it's not doing what you want it to do. And it's like, there's this whole, again, iceberg. The boost point is up here. All these other factors are down here, and you have to go, oh, great, here's one more thing I have to learn, about Facebook ads. I just want to write a song.
Oh, yeah.
Now I'm studying Facebook ads. Ugh.
Yeah, for sure. This concept, I mean, because a musician is an artist at your core, right? So, I mean, it's just, I want to, like, I think that's the ideal concept. I want to create art and just create art and then perform it for
you got to make a living,
fans.
Too. That's the problem.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think you should win a lottery. I think you're welcome.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Feel free to sign me up for one and break the system in my favor.
Well, honestly, I mean, you know, as long as you keep providing everybody with great music, then I think hopefully everything should turn out in your favor. And we really like your music, so thank you so much for doing it. So we want to give you the chance right now to tell everybody where they can keep up with you and where they can find the new album.
Awesome. So on Instagram, you can find me at Emily Davis Music. I hate Twitter, but feel free if you want. It's at E Davis Music. Facebook is also E Davis Music. We're Emily Davis and the Murder Police on Facebook. You can download, you could pre-order the album if you want, or eventually download it at emilydavis.bandcamp.com. It is, however, available on whatever streaming app you prefer. If you want to download it via Apple Music or whatever, you can do that too. It'll be available on June 25th.
Awesome. Well, Emily, thank you so much for coming on the show. Yeah. We absolutely appreciate it.
You're smart as a whip and equally talented, and it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. So
thank you.
The interview is over, so F off, please.
Sounds good. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. Thank you for giving us the platform to do so.
Oh, absolutely. And we wish you all the best and look forward to hopefully seeing you live sometime and seeing some of these songs performed.
Absolutely. You are extended an invitation indefinitely.
Well, thanks so much, Emily, and all the best, and we'll talk to you later.
Sounds good.
You haven't seen him in person yet when you say that.
Oh, we can rock out just as good as anybody.
Yeah, that's true. Thank you so much. Thanks. Have a good day.
All right. Bye now.
Take care.